Penslinger.com and Patiobooks.com present Borrowed Time. Borrowed Time is a free audiobook written and performed by Keith Hughes. This episode contains graphic elements that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Episode 12. This is Paul with the story so far. In episode 11, Relevant borrowed Glenn's car from the train station and returned to Bertrand's house to find one of Glenn's men lying exactly where he'd left him, but dead from a gunshot wound. Knowing that the entire house was now a crime scene and would be dusted for prints, he wiped the house down as best he could. In his final step in making the house look like he had never been there, he closed up the cubbyhole and then exited out the back door. Relevant used the PDA to travel back a week so he could contact Bertrand, but ended up arriving just as Glenn and I appeared to confront the old man and retrieve his device. He watched as we argued, then witnessed the old man using the PDA to vanish into time. Relevant waited to check the cubbyhole until Glenn and I left, but it was still empty. He reasoned that if the device wasn't in the doctor's house, then it must be in the lab. Realizing that Glenn and I are not aware of who he is in this, well, week ago time frame, Relevant used the doctor's ID card to enter the lab building and take the elevator to the third floor. After guessing that the door bearing the symbol for plutonium led to Bertrand's lab, Relevant waved the card at the entry pad, not knowing whether it would open the door or raise an alarm. That's what happened last time. Now you're ready for the rest of episode 12. Chapter 29. Checkmate. Wednesday, September 3rd, 2008. 10:32 p.m. At first, nothing happened. Ness waited anxiously for the sound of alarms and booted feet. Instead, he heard a slight hum, and the small screen lit up with the doctor's name and photograph. Ness opened the door and stepped inside. He was in a reception area with a desk and a couple of comfortable-looking chairs. The door closed behind him with a click, and he noticed immediately that the room was not empty. Standing by the desk and looking at him with a slight smile was himself. His copy looked as tired as Ness felt, and had his hoodie unzipped to expose his smeghead t-shirt. "We don't have much time," the other Ness said. "Glenn will be here in a few minutes." "Where did you come from?" Ness asked. 5 minutes from now," the other said, and glanced at the device in his hand. "Make that 4. Get your device ready for a 5-minute jump. I had to do it on the fly, so it will be easier for you if you're ready." Ness briefly pondered his double telling him to get ready to do something that he had already done, creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. But he didn't have time to think about temporal mechanics, so he pulled the PDA with the decoy tag out of his pocket. His doppelganger left the desk and hid behind a filing cabinet that was near the door. "Whatever you do, don't look at me," his double said, grinning. "We don't want to tip him off." Ness finished setting the device for a 5-minute backward jump and moved away from the door. Feeling suddenly hot, he unzipped his hoodie. The waiting wore on his nerves, and he almost sighed with relief when the door hummed and Glenn strode in, gun in hand. At least the weapon was not pointed at Ness. He moved a little further back until he felt the back of his legs bump into the front of the desk. Glenn's eyes locked with Ness's from across the room as he tapped the screen on the device. Glenn did not seem suspicious that anything had changed. Ness still stood against the desk, clutching the PDA. But he was several minutes older, back from his small jaunt to the near past.
"Who are you?"
Glenn asked, his gun coming up to point at Ness.
"Why are you here?"
It seemed strange to be viewing this conversation from in front of the desk rather than from behind the filing cabinet. He remembered crouching there, waiting just as his double was doing now for Glenn to take one more step. For the second time, he enjoyed the perplexed look on Glenn's face as he reminded himself again that the Glenn of this time did not know about Nestor Relevant yet. Ness brought his attention back to the moment and forced himself not to look at his copy crouched behind the filing cabinet. Glenn took that step, and Ness watched as his double sprung up and knocked Glenn on the head with the butt of his gun, producing a solid thud. Ness remembered the vibration that had shot up his arm at the impact. Glenn fell to the floor unconscious, and his firearm tumbled from his limp fingers. Ness's double kicked Glenn's gun away, and it slid across the room to stop under the desk. Then he squatted and put two fingers against Glenn's neck to confirm that he was still alive. Ness approached until Glenn's body was all that separated Ness from his double. "We're getting kind of good at the whole hitting them from behind thing," Ness said with a grin. "Yeah. So what do we do with him?" the double asked, coming to his feet. "We could shoot out his knee. That would slow him down," Ness said, frowning down at Glenn. "I certainly don't want to kill him." "Me neither," his double agreed. "I've made it this far without becoming a murderer." "Yes, I have," Ness said. "Maybe we gave him a concussion. Let's leave him be." The double nodded agreement and took out his device. "Then my work here is done." He gave Ness a jaunty wave. "Be seeing you." His double tapped the screen and vanished. Ness grabbed Glenn by the wrist and waved the doctor's card in front of the pad next to the door that led to Dr. Bertrand's lab. There was another hum as Ness opened the door and entered, pulling Glenn's body inside. Paul sat behind his desk, nursing a glass of scotch on the rocks and his wounded pride. The confrontation with Bertrand had gone poorly, and his meeting with John hadn't gone much better. Due to John's reticence, he'd had no reason to believe the doctor had a working device with him up until the moment the scientist had disappeared. If Paul's personal plans were to succeed, then the old man would have to be found, whenever he was hiding, and the device taken from him. Paul took another swig of his drink as his phone beeped. He pressed the speakerphone button.
"Robbins."
"Sir, this is Larry, in the security office." The voice was young and nervous. Paul enjoyed the fear with which his own staff regarded him.
"Yes?"
"Sir, we have a man who entered the PU lab using Dr. Bertrand's access card, but he is not Dr. Bertrand." Paul put his glass down and leaned forward toward the phone. An intruder in the PU lab so soon after his visit to Bertrand could not be a coincidence.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes, sir," the guard said. "He must be somewhere in his late 30s, early 40s. The other odd thing is that I can no longer pick him up on the security feed. I had a strange image of him for a while, but now the lab shows as empty."
"What was wrong with the image?" Paul asked.
His curiosity piqued. "I was getting some sort of odd ghost image, and it looked like there were two of him. Now I don't see him in the lab at all, but I never saw him leave."
"Glenn," Paul thought. "He must have noticed the entry on Bertrand's card and gone to investigate. He would disable the cameras if he were there."
Paul also realized that the double image was not the result of a bad video, but that the intruder must have the device.
"I'll take care of it," Paul said, hanging up the phone.
He opened the desk drawer and pulled out a black leather box. He lifted the black gun from its velvet confines. It was time for him to take charge of events and secure the desired course of his future. He slipped the gun into his suit coat pocket and left his office at a run. Searching every nook and cranny of the lab turned out to be a bigger task than Ness had anticipated. The lab had 5 drawer-filled lab tables, several bookshelves, innumerable cabinets, and a large desk. Knowing his time was limited, Ness hurried to the desk and checked the drawers. Not finding the second device there, he moved on to the lab tables. He was so intent on searching, he did not hear the door to the lab unlock and open.
"Don't move," a voice commanded.
Ness turned to see Paul Robbins standing at the door with a gun pointed at him. He had never seen Paul head-on, and Ness noticed the eyes for the first time. Paul's eyes carried a strange intensity, a kind of manic energy that was hard to look at. They were the eyes of a predator, and Ness was the prey. Ness dived and rolled behind the lab table. Paul's gun went off with a deafening blast, but he hadn't anticipated Ness's move, and the shot hit the linoleum floor behind him.
crouched behind the table, Ness pulled out his gun.
"What are you doing here?" Paul asked. "Who are you?"
Ness popped up and pulled the trigger of his gun 3 times, aiming high. The bullet slammed harmlessly into the ceiling tiles, but Paul was forced to find cover behind another lab table. "I am fulfilling Dr. Bertrand's vow to you. The plan will fail," Ness shouted. He moved to the other end of the table.
"What plan is that?" Paul asked.
He popped up above the table to shoot at the place where Ness's voice had been a moment ago. Wood splintered as bullets tore through the table.
"You know, to take over the world," Ness said, then almost laughed.
"Am I in a James Bond flick here?"
"You and John Felch."
He stood and shot 3 more rounds toward the sound of Paul's voice.
"You've only heard Bertrand's twisted version," Paul said, his voice strained as he moved around his table. "I'm doing this to stop all of the injustice and pain in the world. I found John's plans, and his audacity surprised me, but I have no interest in being his henchman, so while I give him high marks for effort, there is no way I'm leaving that idiot in charge. Instead, I will be taking the reins."
"Through assassination, bribery, and corruption? Hardly sounds like a brave new world to me." Ness sprinted to another table further away from Paul. Shots rang out, but once again missed Ness as he rolled the safety.
"Whenever something new is built, the old must be destroyed. It is a fact of nature. We do it because we must."
Ness popped up and shot again. When he came back down, he noticed that the slide on the gun was locked open. He checked his pockets and then remembered that he had lost the extra clips in his mad dash to catch the train.
"So said every despot and penny ante dictator throughout history," Ness responded, hoping to buy some time.
"Be that as it may," Paul said, coming to his feet, "you are out of ammo, and your resistance is finished. Get up."
As Ness hesitated, the door to the lab opened, and Glenn strolled in. Ness peeked over the table and frowned at him. Glenn stood in the doorway, looking curiously at the unconscious form of his double that lay on the floor. He looked up to find Ness peering at him from behind the lab table.
"Relevant."
Glenn brought his gun up to cover Ness, and an evil-looking grin spread across his face. Ness crouched down again and looked at his empty gun. He was out of options. Setting the gun on the floor, Ness stood with hands raised. He kicked the gun away, and it came to rest near the unconscious Glenn. Paul followed the movement of the gun across the floor, and he noticed a prone form for the first time. His wondering gaze lifted to meet that of the other Glenn.
"You have it,"
Paul whispered. Glenn's eyes shifted from Ness to Paul.
"Yes, I do," Glenn replied, glancing at Ness and then back to Paul. "How far have you come?" Paul asked, barely able to speak above a whisper.
"A week."
Glenn kept his gun trained on Ness, but continued to look at Paul.
"Let me have it."
Paul reached out his left hand.
"I don't think so," Glenn replied.
With a stunning burst of speed, Glenn swung his gun to point at Paul. Glenn's gun spat fire and bullets, accompanied by 2 loud cracks. Paul's head jerked as blood and brains exploded from the back of his head. Before the body had fallen to the floor, Glenn's gun was once again pointed at Ness.
"Come on," Glenn said, gesturing with the gun.
Ness came out from behind the table, and Glenn waved him toward the desk. Ness walked around Paul's body and saw the 2 holes in the forehead that he had taken pictures of at the water park, or would take pictures of a few days hence.
"Empty your pockets."
Ness pulled out his wad of cash, the keys to Dr. Bertrand's car, the key card, and the 2 devices, one with a yellow sticky note labeled decoy.
"How did you find me?"
Glenn nodded at his still prone double.
"I remembered entering the outer office, seeing you there, and getting jumped."
Ness frowned at this, thinking that maybe he should have killed Glenn after all, or at least given him a bigger concussion.
"Why did you kill your boss?" Ness asked. "I thought you guys were a team."
"He and John have their plans, but why should I be a pawn when I can be a king?"
Glenn gave Ness a cold smile. "So your plan is the same?"
"Basically.
but theirs was too humane. I will modify it. Hearing a plan consisting of murder and mayhem being called humane gave Ness shivers. How much worse would Glenn's version be?
I don't think I want to see that future, Ness muttered.
Don't worry, you won't.
Glenn picked up the cash and put it in his shirt pocket. He gave a snort as he looked at the devices.
Labeling the decoy defeats the purpose, don't you think?
Glenn picked up the device without the yellow note and slipped it into his pants pocket.
Have a souvenir, Glenn said. For a few more seconds, anyway.
He picked up the real device with the yellow sticky note to hand it to Ness, but stopped in mid-movement. Finding himself suddenly unable to move, Glenn's eyes widened. Ness took a step back, not sure what was going to happen. He realized Glenn had stumbled into what Dr. Bertrand had warned Ness about. Glenn had touched a device while traveling that was not attuned to his frequency. Glenn's skin began to look grainy, as if it were made of sand. His eyes bulged as panic consumed him. He appeared to fold in on himself and become almost two-dimensional. With a wail and a flash of light, Glenn vanished completely as the molecules that made up his body imploded. Ness saw his device falling from where Glenn's hand had been and leaped forward to catch it, stretching his hand out like an outfielder. As he dived, he felt the device fall into his palm. He hit the floor and slid across it, triumphantly clutching the PDA. He regained his feet and picked up the decoy and his cash from where they had fallen from Glenn's pockets. Apparently, Glenn and everything he had brought with him imploded, but anything else was still here. The doctor had been right. Touching another device while on a trip was spectacularly fatal. Not even a trace remained. Even though Glenn's copy of the second PDA had dissolved with him, there was another one that was native to this time. Ness knew it was up to him to find it and keep it safe. He also reminded himself that he would have to be careful when he found the second prototype, or he would suffer Glenn's fate. Nearly 15 minutes later, Ness finished his search of the drawers and shelves in the lab with no results. He absently stared at a floral print on the wall and sighed in exasperation. Where could it be? He spun around, visually checking the drab room once again for any hiding places he might have missed. He came to a stop, and his eye once again came to rest on the picture. Ness suddenly realized just how out of place the bright flowers were in the otherwise utilitarian lab. He crossed the room and tried to lift the picture frame, but it would not budge. Seeing that the frame could not be removed, Ness gripped the left edge of the frame and pulled. The picture swung open on hinges, revealing a small safe set into the wall. A scan pad was mounted to the wall next to it. Ness pulled the card from his jeans pocket and waved it in front of the pad. A small display lit up and displayed a simple question. What is your name?
Dr. Francis Bertrand, Ness said. But the safe did not react. Another thought came to him, and he hoped that it was not keyed to react to only the doctor's voice. Nestor, he said. He was expecting some sort of reaction, but nothing changed. The question still glowed from the small screen. He frowned and stared at it for a moment. Except for the time at the diner in 1986, the doctor had only ever called him by his full name. So what better way to secure the contents than by using a nickname that no one would ever have heard the doctor say? Ness Relevant, he said in a loud voice. The screen darkened, and for a moment he thought he had lost his last chance to open the safe. Then a muted click came from inside the safe as the door latches released. Ness pulled the thick door fully open, and there on top of a small stack of papers and notebooks was the second device. Remembering Glenn's fate, Ness returned to the desk and retrieved two pencils and a large manila envelope. Back at the safe, he used the pencils like chopsticks and carefully lifted out the device, the erasers preventing it from slipping out of his grip. He shook open the envelope with his other hand and dropped the device into it. Ness licked the envelope and sealed it, folded it over, and tucked it into the front waistband of his jeans. He closed the safe door and heard the lock click back into place, and then swung the picture back over the safe. Walking to the door, he stopped at the inert form of Glenn, picked up his empty gun, and returned it to his waistband in the small of his back. Ness looked down at the unconscious Glenn and gave him a jaunty wave. Be seeing you. Ness opened the door to the reception area and exited the lab. It was time to go home. You have been listening to the patio book Borrowed Time, which is written and performed by Keith Hughes. Thanks for joining me on this journey. To leave feedback for the Borrowed Time podcast, you can join the forum at keithhughes.ning.com, post a comment on penslinger.com, leave me a voicemail at 206-309-9171, email me at khughes@penslinger.com, or follow my secret web alias, Ed Gizmo, on Twitter. Reviews on Podiobooks and iTunes would be greatly appreciated, and please tell your friends about this podcast. The theme music used for Borrowed Time is The Hunt by A Big Guitar off of their Bellerophon album, which is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, be seeing you.